Hello again, welcome to Chew the Fat for the 25th of June 2021. My name is Russell Alford.
My name is Patrick Hanlon.
And you're more than welcome to yet another episode as we explore the world of Irish food and drink and interview some fascinating people from it. This week we have a talented pastry chef who is going out on her own to do some really, really exciting things between virtual classes as well as pastry drops. It's Aoife Noonan, who has such a great range of experience. We're really excited to chat with her later on in the podcast. We also are going to be chatting about wine, aren't we?
It's an expert subject of ours. So actually, I think there's an alcohol mentioned every single episode of this.
Well, it's a food and drink podcast. Of course.
So we are going to be talking about the more unique ways that you can purchase and serve alcohol that are slightly unconventional, but we'll get into that after we go through some updates from the Chew the Fat notice board. After a year's hiatus, Food on the Edge is back for its sixth outing in the form of a blended symposium comprising both in-person and virtual events. Swapping Galway for Dublin for the first time since it began in 2015, the venue this year will be Urban Farm Airfield Estate in Dundrum on the 18th and 19th of October. Founder JP McMahon this week announced the theme as Social Gastronomy, as well as several first-time speakers in the lineup, including Garima Arora, the first Indian woman to win a Michelin star, acclaimed chef and restaurateur Andre Chiang, food writer Alice Zavzlaski, and returning to Food on the Edge will be Mark Best, star of Netflix Chef's Table. Virtual events will go Virtual tickets, excuse me, will go on sale in July, priced at €95, while in-person tickets will go on sale later in the year from €350 for 2 days and from €195 for 1 day. Details can be found at foodontheedge.com.
And of course, JP was a previous guest here on Chew the Fat, and that's a very interesting interview to listen back to in the archives. Going to Cork, a new barbecue pop-up from the team behind the fantastic Glass Curtain is called Birdsong in the City, and it arrives on Cork's Harley Street in a limited form on the 24th to the 27th of June, so it's currently open, as well as the 1st to the 4th of July. Chef Brian Murray is cooking on a bespoke Basque-style grilling rig using Irish beef, daily landed seafood, Skianor chicken, and seasonal local veg. Think grilled cod collar, octopus, and piquant ceviche. Meltingly tender short ribs and spicy peri peri chicken, as well as ice cream sandwiches, and my mouth is watering at the sound of all of that. For more details and timings, you can head over to their Instagram page, which is birdsong_inthecity.
Following her tenure at Dean's Epic in Belfast and being the second ever woman in Ireland to win a Michelin star, followed by stints at Glenigan's in Moira and Ballou House, Chef Danny Barry is turning her hand to gastronomic getaways, joining the Wicklow Escape as executive chef. Danny has designed a 3-day foodie immersive experience at the Escape aimed at couples and groups of friends, as well as catering to small gatherings, celebrations, and occasions. Danny's menu will showcase the local larder of the southeast of the island, as well as bringing global inspiration through her own travels and her 20 years in kitchens. Formerly known as the Elbow Room Escape in Donard, County Wicklow, this new iteration is a rustic and elegant country retreat comprising 7 deluxe bedrooms, all bookable individually, with an outdoor kitchen, garden terrace, and wood-fired hot tub set in an acre of a countryside idyll. To find out more information or to book, visit thewicklowescape.com.
The closest distillery here to us in County Louth is Lestoke Distillery, and they are hosting a very novel raffle at the moment, offering 5% shares in their business, as well as a second and third prize of £10,000 and £5,000 respectively. So one ticket could potentially win an entry back 250 or even 500 times its initial value, if you don't win the shares, that is. You could be the newest part owner of the award-winning family business based in Tinure, just outside Drogheda, which produces a series of gin expressions under the Stoke brand, as well as a new Wise Ale whiskey, and is eyeing up serious international expansion. Entries cost £20 sterling, and the competition is open to entries from all over the world until the 9th of July. And naturally, because this is booze, all entrants must be over 18. You can enter at raffle.com. That's raffall.com/Le Stoke Distillery.
It's the return of Taste of Dublin, and they are making up for precious lost time. Taste of Dublin has finally announced that the festival will return after a year away, taking place on September the 1st to the 5th, 2021. Returning to the Ivy Gardens, Taste of Dublin will run 12 sessions over 5 days, with tickets starting at €20, excluding booking fee, on sale from today, Friday, June 25th. Additional sessions have been added to reduce capacity far lower than usual for the outdoor event, and the organisers are primed to adapt the festival as it happens in accordance with current restrictions. The lineup of chefs and traders is still to be announced, but details will be announced over time on their social media channels, as well as on their website, tasteofdublin.com.
And as always, if you have any news or bits of information that you'd like to share with the world, you can email us at hiya@gastrogaze.com before Thursday afternoon for inclusion in next week's podcast. Or, of course, you can send us a message on social media, where we usually spend most of our days anyway. It was actually only as you were reading it out there that I realised that Taste of Dublin is a bit longer. It's actually starting on a Wednesday.
Yeah, it's over 5 days.
It's over five days. And because it used to be Thursday afternoon when it would kick off and everything like that. So there's an extra day, extra sessions. And that's obviously to, I think there's a pandemic on or something like that. So it's to, you know, reduce capacity and the likes of that. At least it's nice to see some sort of festival somewhat confirmed. Hopefully, come September, there will be a lot of certainty and we will see Taste of Dublin returning to the Ivy Gardens, and we'll be able to be sensibly enjoying cans of wine, perhaps.
And the other thing is, it isn't clashing with Electric Picnic either.
Yes, because Electric Picnic has been moved towards the end of September. Although I did see some describe it as more Electric Picnic, more like Electric Blanket.
Electric Blanket, yeah. Which, I mean, I agree about pushing it back, but it's going to be a bit chillier at the end of September than it would be at the beginning. But
pray for a glorious September full of warmth and sunshine and happiness and less restrictions and lots of festivals. Wouldn't that be nice?
I'd like that a lot.
I think we'd all like that.
Wine.
Please.
Wine. No, that's not an offer. It's a talking point.
Oh, the script, yeah.
So I think we have enjoyed our fair share of wine over the past 18 months.
And the rest.
It has absolutely increased over the pandemic. But at the same time, I think our choices have changed, and we have definitely kind of angled towards quality.
Yes. If you listened to the episode where we talked to Bridget O'Hora from Bridie's Wine Chats, and that's episode 2 of this particular series, we discussed this in quite a lot of detail, that I guess we personally became a little bit more discerning about our choices, a bit more conscious about them, that we still enjoy anything and everything, but we are understanding wine a bit more. And that does seem to be across the board, I guess. The expansion of online education, online classes, even corporate gigs. Mm. Lots of corporations and businesses are using wine tastings and wine appreciation as a way of getting staff together virtually at a distance and all that type of stuff.
And it's exactly that. It's experiencing it. It's educating yourself in it. And it's also tasting the wine, appreciating it, actually tasting it instead of chugging it back. And we do our fair share of that as well, of course.
Excuse
always
me, we do not
drink responsibly.
But you're talking about appreciation and connoisseurs and all this type of stuff. Now, if I say to, I was watching in the classic episode of I'm Alan Partridge yesterday, where it's like, oh, you know, wine people, oh, a lovely bouquet of this, lovely bouquet of that, oh, quaffable and all this type of stuff. If you say a box of wine to many a schnob or connoisseur or an expert, many will go, yeah.
Yeah.
Like absolute ew.
I think it instantly conjures poor quality. I think it instantly conjures, I don't know, kind of,
I also, the cheapness. And there's a whole argument, obviously, if you go back into the history of boxes of wine, Australia was one that was pretty much where it was invented, the goon bag, as it was called and is called. And there was a perception that it was used by predominantly poor people, alcoholics, and the likes, in a very negative sense. But looking at it with the eyes of 2021, I guess, and we're looking at sustainability and the likes.
Absolutely.
Bags in boxes, they're less carbon footprint, they're economical, keeps it fresher for longer, easy to transport. All these types of things are really big selling points. And Wines Direct, who are fantastic, who, let's just say, have sent a few bottles our way over the last while, because they have sold some fantastic choices of wines, I have to say. They have started doing boxes of wines. Mm. And they're not, you know, standard. They are very, very good quality, aren't they?
Absolutely. And I think it's quite a unique thing to come to the Irish market, because it'd be rare to find this type of quality in this format pretty much anywhere across Ireland. Obviously, there are, it is quite prevalent in Sweden.
Yes, and we've spent a lot of time in Sweden.
Yeah.
As in, over the past 6-7 years, bar the past year, it was pretty much the only time. We'd normally spend about 3-4 weeks over there over the course of a year. Mm. And we love it. We love the system there. If you're not too familiar with the way Swedish wine is sold, not Swedish wine, although there is a bottle of Swedish wine right there, actually. But the way Sweden operates, they have a store called the Systembolaget. Did I do that right?
Yeah.
I did. My Swedish is coming on leaps and bounds.
Jättebra.
Yeah. They have this system called the Systembolaget, where you are essentially segregated into an alcohol-only store. Everything that is above a certain percentage is sold in there, and anything below that is allowed to be sold in shops and supermarkets everywhere else. The opening hours are quite strict, so if you think Ireland's 10:30 a.m. to 10 p.m. rule is strict, visit Stockholm and you'll see strict, because they normally open up, if I remember right, at 11 or 12 in the day, and close about 6 or 7 depending on where you are in the country.
And are closed on a Sunday.
But they close at 3 on a Saturday.
Yep.
Or again, some of them in bigger cities close at 4. And you end up having this rush for people trying to go in and buy lots of bottles of wine, slabs of beer, but also boxes of wine. Because for some reason, Sweden has this complete opposite attitude when it comes to boxes of wine. And we've seen it, we've witnessed it, we've consumed it. It's quality.
Yeah.
You know, you can talk about the, I guess, the procurement that the Systembolaget.
I mean, of course, it's the largest importer in the country because it has the monopoly on it. But the thing that they have is choice in the boxes of wine. It isn't just the cheap stuff in bulk at a great price. It's expressions, it's countries, it's options from South Africa, from Australia, from Chile, even from France and Italy. So they really have scoured the globe and tried to choose producers from the various regions to offer great wines at a unique style, I guess.
And like, again, those kind of things about the pros of them, the carbon footprint, fresher for longer, also the handiness of like picnics, barbecues, going to your summer house and having a bottle that isn't having a box that isn't several bottles taking up space in the back of the car. One of the things, there's an article on Wine Business International from back in 2014. So this isn't a new phenomenon.
Not at all.
So it's basically, in Sweden, the average consumer does not devalue the producer's brand for having a box wine. Rather, the opposite. We see that the same consumers who buy a certain wine in a box during weekdays are buying the same wine in a bottle for weekend consumption.
It's that exact thing that it can be opened up to have just one glass. And also the thing about it being transportable, if it drops, it isn't glass.
Yes.
It won't smash.
Yes.
So it kind of keeps everything fresh. It's easier to store. It's easier to transport. But I think it is that cultural thing of they do not have a preconception about, oh, just because it's in a cardboard box, it isn't an instant equal of, oh, it's poor quality. They understand that it's the same wines, it's just how it appears on the shelves.
And a thing to also note, I guess, from our point of view that we experience with Sweden in particular, and the way that the alcohol buying system is, there's no offers. So I know there was a lot of chatter here in Ireland about the likes of Supervalue, Dunnes, and everyone no longer being able to use vouchers to off the cost of alcohol. You're not longer able to earn loyalty card points. The likes of the O'Brien's loyalty scheme is basically gone. So there's a lot of changes that have taken place. And Sweden's system means that there isn't this thing of it's on offer, I'll buy it. They don't even have fridges. Nothing is chilled.
Yes.
Nothing is chilled because that gives a particular brand or product preference.
Also, everything's individual.
There's
nothing in a pack.
Yes.
However, in the box, it's a slightly larger quantity, but even in that, there's various sizes of boxes as well. It isn't just the one square style of box. It's like, here's a small box. Here's a slightly larger entertaining style box.
So I mentioned the Wines Direct, and I'll give some details of that just towards the end. But another innovation that has come along recently from Wine Lab is cans of wine. Now, I will say they are obviously not the first to do cans of wine. I know a couple of... I think Aldi and Lidl have cans of wine at the moment, more sparkling varieties and the
like. Or like spritzers, that kind of thing.
Yeah. But Wine Labs have introduced a canned wine company, and it's only available in Ireland through Wine Lab. And these are high quality, vibrant wines in a can, and they don't compromise on quality. You can get different varieties, colours and the likes. €25 for four of them, and they're in 250ml cans, and they're also on their site and different stockists. But it's described as, it's Saturday night, he wants red, you want white. You don't fancy opening a full bottle, and you're certainly not going to entertain the shoddy quality that you've come to expect from a quarter bottle. Ugh! Quarter bottles, nasty. So... I think there's a great bit of innovation with this.
Absolutely. And again, it's that thing that they're easily chilled, they're easily transportable, and if they fall, they probably aren't going to smash into smithereens and completely spoil everything.
Are you clumsy?
I'm just saying, if, in case, I'm not sure I've ever smashed a full bottle of wine, but now I've jinxed it, so thanks very much. But in the canned wine company, they have three options currently available in Ireland through Wine Lab, and they are an Austrian Gruner, a French Grenache Rosé, delicious, and a Spanish Garnacha, I think it is. Interesting that it's available in Ireland now.
Yes, indeed. I also know Boutique Wines at one point had under the brand Liberator, South African brand, recently. They had sold some, but they don't seem to have them in stock at the moment when I was doing research for this, unfortunately, but maybe they'll come back. Now, let's talk about hard seltzers, because that's the other thing that's in a can. And we're talking about festivals and all that type of stuff. It's an unusual time for introducing convenience wines, I guess, and convenience beverages like this and new age things, because it would be so traditional to go along to a festival and enjoy some of these, but... We're seeing a whole summer now, essentially, where we won't have festivals to the same level or extent or at all compared to other years. And hard seltzers are something that are very popular for it. Gins and Tins, of course. Jawbox up in Belfast have launched some recently. You also have espresso martinis in a can. The Kahlua one, which is actually...
It's actually good.
Nitro, and it's very similar to a Guinness can, I guess, in that kind of sense. Yeah. And it's a decent enough espresso martini. There's a dram in a can.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean... tiny cans. Yeah. Tiny, tiny cans. Yeah. Such a great idea. And like, I think canning as an option is very trendy and very much increasing at the moment.
That dram in a can, by the way, is from Two Stacks Distillery. Yes. I knew off the top of my head, I couldn't remember, but yes.
But yeah, on the subject of hard seltzers, I'm averse to them just because they taste too close to water than alcohol. So I think they're too easy to drink. I'd opt for the kind of cocktails in a can quicker, just because I think I would have it slower.
But yeah, and it's flavor. It is flavor, and it's exciting, you know. And I think the seltzers can lead on a path where, you know, anytime we've talked to people about hard seltzers, go, God, they're too easy to drink. And it's like, that's not a good thing. That really is irresponsible and not a good thing. And, you know, you can take your own personal responsibility with it, but at the end of the day, if it is like water, it's a bit risky.
Yeah.
I'm not too much of a fan. And I think the quality of many of them is shocking. Myself, that's what my own two cents in it. But, you know, each to their own and all that type of stuff. I did say I'd mention about the Wines Direct ones. They are €49, including delivery for those particular ones.
Great.
Their wines are from some of their own favourite winemakers around. They have a chic bag in tube wines, which if you look at their website, they have some really great shapes and sizes. Yeah. There's one that looks like a tube and it has a tap on it. There's another one that looks like a set of library books.
Of course,
is actually on the artwork of this particular episode of the podcast. So go to winesdirect.ie for those. And if you want the cans, they are available at winelab.ie
as well.
Yes.
Exactly that.
I was just making sure I got the designation correctly, because that would have been very embarrassing otherwise. I think we have enough wine talk. What about some cake talk?
Yes, onto pastry talk. So now, the pandemic has prompted lots of people to take new directions in their careers and start exciting new chapters. And among them is talented pastry chef Aoife Noonan. Formerly of restaurant Patrick Gibo, Glover's Alley, and John Farrell's stable of restaurants, Aoife is now striking out alone, swapping the kitchen for I'd say more personal food experiences, including exclusive cookery classes held online and hand delivering restaurant quality pastry creations and desserts. And we are delighted to have Aoife here to talk us through her exciting new venture now. Hello, Aoife.
Hi.
So good. So good to have you on True to Fat. And thank you for spending some time with us today.
Yeah, thank you so much for asking me. It's an absolute pleasure to chat to you both. So thank you.
You have some really exciting news with your bespoke online cookery classes, plus cakes delivered to the home as well. Do you want to tell us a little about that?
Yeah, so I think my new business idea venture came about just from the last year. It definitely isn't a new idea. I think subconsciously, or maybe I was always destined to teach. I don't know. I've always wanted to be a primary school teacher, like growing up, always like wanted to be a primary school teacher. So it's not something that's like completely new. And I think definitely the pandemic has kind of changed, well, accelerated, you know, maybe my kind of ideas a little bit, and brought it about maybe a lot sooner than it would have, like organically. But yeah, I'm really delighted to be kind of teaching online classes, and just share a bit of kind of my passion and my knowledge that I've amassed over the past number of years working in kitchens, and just kind of share that with people and, you know, create like a really kind of accessible, like warm, interactive, like atmosphere and environment, just to kind of share like the skills and to teach people. And I think I get such a buzz out of, you know, seeing someone achieve something. I just get such a kick out of it. And, you know, people I think have definitely, in the last year anyway, have definitely, you know, they want to learn new things. They're definitely kind of adapting to that, and they're open to new things and learning new things. So I think with the classes, a lot of people are kind of jumping on that bandwagon on the online classes thing. So I didn't really want that to be the case in my on my kind of side of things. So that's why the limited edition pastry is another kind of part of the venture. So that's another side of it completely. So while I'd be offering online classes that are accessible, I also wanted to offer people something that, you know, was new and exciting every month that you can't really get anywhere else. And that's, I suppose that's as a result of my experience in fine dining and, you know, high-end patisserie over the last 2 years.
I love the fact that you went on so many different tangents with the whole idea from classes to also delivery, and being able to say you can learn how to make it or I've made it for you and it's delicious. But can I backtrack a little bit? Because you mentioned that you had always wanted to be a primary school teacher, and I don't want to let go of that point. At what point did you go from primary school teacher to pastry chef in your mind and with your kind of training and everything?
Yeah, it doesn't really link up, does it? I think when I was in school, you know, I was filling out my CAO and I didn't know what I wanted to do in college, like, you know, most 17-year-olds. And I kind of was thinking, right, well, do I want to be a teacher? You know, is that going to turn me off kids? I'm impatient. You know, is that going to come across like, you know, I have to do honors Irish, you know, like to be a teacher? But I mean, I think it got to a point where I was just thinking about all my subjects that I was doing. And I was like, well, what do I really enjoy? And I loved home ec and I loved music. And it was kind of a toss up between the two for college. That's kind of how that changed. But yeah.
Love that.
Incredible. And you have had an incredible career as a chef. For those who are tuning in who think, Aoife Noonan, I have heard that name before, and who haven't experience of you, could you offer us an overview of your experience in kitchens?
Yeah, so I suppose I really kind of started my real, like, classic training in Patrick Evo's, which is a 2-star Michelin restaurant, and was the only 2-star in Ireland for a good 2 years. So I started there after I graduated college. I'd worked in a few different restaurants between then. Started there as a commis chef, hadn't got a clue. Michelin, what is this? Crazy. Like, I just didn't think I was good enough. You know, I didn't have the confidence in a kitchen at all. But then, you know, I gave myself, I said, I'll give it a month. I'll, you know, see how I go. And it was very tough. But I ended up staying there nearly 3.5-4 years. So after the first year, I became head pastry chef. I got offered that position. And it kind of went from there, really. After that, I went to Luna, and I was executive pastry chef of John's group of restaurants, which was Luna at the time, SMS, which is gone as well, the Butcher's Grill, 777, and Dillinger's. So that was a completely new thing for me to have to kind of oversee desserts in all these kind of contemporary restaurants, in cuisines, you know, different, like, restaurants with different cuisines that I had never really kind of experienced before. So that was a challenge. And then after that, then I went to Glover's Alley. So that was the last, I suppose, restaurants I worked in. After that, I stopped working in restaurants. So that's where I'm at now.
But yeah. You've also been busy. You're also studying nutrition, isn't it?
Yeah. So after I stopped working in restaurants, I was a bit, like, I'm not going to lie, I was a bit lost. I was a bit confused. I didn't have the same passion and drive that I once had to, you know, in the kitchen. I still had passion and drive, but I wanted to, like, learn something else. So I took a bit of time away. I went traveling. I went solo traveling. I did a bit of work with a few different brands over the course of the year. And I tried to figure out my next kind of step, really. When I went traveling, I did like reflect a lot. It was a bit of a cliche. I went away to, like, find myself, but, like, I kind of did. Like, I did get a lot of clarity. I was by myself every day. You know, it really, when you're on your own and away from that kind of crazy kitchen environment every single day, you do really kind of take the time to think about, right, well, what do I want to do? What will make me happy? And, you know, what will fulfill me? So to be honest, I kind of was always interested in nutrition. When I did my culinary arts degree, my thesis was actually based on like nutrition for children and like the parental influence over, you know, children's health and what they eat and how that affects them in later life. And I just think it's so interesting. So maybe subconsciously I was interested in nutrition, but I didn't put the link, you know, I didn't really link that at the time because I was thinking, okay, well, I need to be a chef and, you know, well, not I need to be a chef, but I was on my way to becoming a chef. So that's kind of where I was at. But I did actually find in one of my old cookbooks there, I saw the other day, I have written a note on it and it's like post-grad nutrition ? And I think I wrote that down like years and years ago. And obviously subconsciously I was thinking about it, but I never really took the steps to do it. You know, working in kitchens for so many years, getting so many amazing opportunities and, you know, working in such great places and learning from amazing chefs, you know, I kept on that path and I wanted to continue on that path, but I never really stepped back to think, well, is this what I want to be doing? Is this really my passion? You know, maybe I thought it was at the time, but yeah, when I went traveling, I kind of really thought about it. And yeah, I came back and I applied for a master's in nutrition. So I'm still doing it now. I'm in my third, I've just finished my second year. So I have another year to go part-time. But yeah, I'm doing that as well.
it doesn't really
tie in with pastry, but
I personally cannot imagine undertaking a course at college again. So huge props on that. On that previous point that you said, as you start this venture, is this you, I guess, exiting the kitchen, or are you kind of keeping the door open for a potential in the future?
Yeah, no, I would never say I've walked away from kitchens, and I don't have anything negative to say about the restaurant industry at all. I just think I got to a point where, you know, I explored that and I wanted to now explore something else. But I mean, if I go into a kitchen tomorrow, like I will still be the same. I'll still have that service head on me and I'll go in there and it'll be like check on, and it'll be the same. I won't be any different. But I just think in terms of like what I want to explore as a, you know, as a different path, you know, that's not my path right now. But I would never say, no, I'm never going back into a kitchen. No, never. Never say that.
You could never. I guess it's kind of like riding a bike as well. That's kind of a thing that you'd be in the rhythm and routine of it the second you're back in there and it's so familiar. And we're seeing this now a lot as reopening is slowly happening and the slow adaption from indoor, outdoors and whatnot is going on. Hospitality as a whole is losing a lot of talent along the way from floor staff to kitchen staff. And as someone who's left it pre-pandemic, is there any insights into, I guess, what could be more enticing for people to go into the industry or to consider training into culinary arts as chefs and so on?
I mean, you've hit the nail on the head. Obviously, you know, we are losing talented chefs, but I think it's great for, you know, people who are interested in food to, maybe pursue other things. I think when I was in college, I thought, right, well, the only thing I can do is be a chef because that's maybe that was the only thing that was kind of offered to me. Mm-hmm. So I do think it's great to obviously pursue other ventures within the food industry. You are right, you know, with hospitality. I think, to be honest with you, I think the hours are one thing that maybe would turn people off. Sometimes it's just a very, very stressful environment. And, you know, it is kind of that environment that people go, it's all screaming and shouting, and that turns people off. It does. It does turn people off. It is difficult to work in that environment. It's very hard. But I think what it comes down to is the love of food and wanting to put something on a plate that people want to enjoy. And I think that's where chefs get their drive. They want to put food up that they love creating. And they, you know, when you get like feedback back from a table, like, you know, Russell really loved your souffle. So I'd be like, oh my God, like that has made my day. Do you know what I mean?
Russell always will, I promise.
How did you know I love a souffle?
No, but it's that, and that's what keeps you going. It is, you know, it's the customer is the most important thing. And, you know, any chef will tell you that.
And actually speaking to people within the industry of late who've reopened they all say, my God, I just miss those elements, that human interaction that you don't get when you hand a, you know, a takeaway box over and all that. It's it really makes that difference, doesn't it?
It really does. And can we talk about pastry? Because I think in our experience, it has just, I guess, evolved into, it's the thing at the moment of like really elaborate pastry creations. Have you seen pastry evolve in kitchens over the years? I mean, it's so technical.
Absolutely. I think when I started out, you know, Twitter was just a thing, was just starting to become a thing. And, you know, social media has obviously blown up, and now you can see what someone in London is creating, you know, and having for their dinner. You know, back then that wasn't, you didn't see that. I think I started putting like photos of my dishes that I was cooking and work on Twitter, and like more kind of chefs like started following me. And now that's how you see, like, that's how you learn about other food, isn't it? It's all on social media. So I do think, yes, it definitely has evolved. You're able to kind of follow along and see what chefs are creating in their kitchens. And, you know, it puts you there, and it, you know, it makes you kind of actually see what's happening and see what's happening. It's like you're eating it yourself.
Absolutely. And are you into, I guess, trends, as in like the cronuts and the cruffins and all of that? Or are you kind of on the arc of the classics?
I mean, I think obviously trends come and go. I think classic, you can't really beat the classics though. I mean, they're classic for a reason. They, you know, they're always stylish, like, but I think it just really comes down to something that tastes really just good. And it doesn't matter if it's rustic, if it's an apple tart, like if it's something, or a tart tatin, or like anything that's simple, but just, like, they're classic for a reason. The flavors go well for a reason. And, you know, okay, it's great to see like contemporary desserts and to kind of to see like the evolution of it, and to see things that make you go, wow. But when it comes down to it, you know, I think understanding the basics is comes before, you know, creating elaborate dessert.
I've asked this a couple of times on previous podcast episodes, specifically chefs, and I've asked about home ec. Is home ec overdue an update? Is it offering us the skills that all of us need in food today?
So I did home ec for in school. I got a D in home ec in my leaving cert.
What? Exclusive.
On the record. I got a D. It was my lowest grade in my leaving cert, and it was my favorite subject.
Wow.
And I used to sit beside my friend Aoife. We were the two Aoifes in the class, and we used to sit at the back of the class having the best time. Our home ec teacher loved us, and it was just an absolute buzz. We learned how to pickle things, and we learned how to make pizza, and we learned how to sew, and that's all I can really remember. I love the food side of it, but all the other aspects of it, yes, I definitely think it needs an upgrade. You know, it's definitely not where it should be, and I think a lot of subjects are like that. Yeah.
And would you like to see maybe cookery as a standalone subject?
Absolutely. Oh my God, it's so important for young people. So important for young people, and there are a few chefs that are kind of pushing that now and championing that in schools. And I know there's a lot of kind of initiatives now that are introducing food from a younger age in primary school as well. And you know, just teaching kids about food and just making them familiar with different foods. And, you know, of course, like, kids are super fussy as it is, but a lot of it comes down to the fact that they haven't seen a particular food before, they haven't tasted it, or they're not familiar. So I think it's introducing those kind of things at a really young age. And obviously like cookery skills are so important for life. Like, it's not just, you know, you need to eat to survive. So, you know, having those skills are the basic thing.
So until the day when you can walk into a secondary school or a primary school and teach people how to make things like salted caramel, dark chocolate truffles, or black forest panna cotta, you're going to be doing these online 2-hour classes as part of your new venture. Can you run through what people could expect from a class?
I want each class to be completely different and to be completely accessible regardless of what your skill level is. And I think when I talk about pastry, or I talk about, like, you know, fondant or lamination or like souffle, or, you know, like anything, people don't know what I'm talking about, you know. And it's about breaking it down and making it simple and simplifying it, because that's where you have to start. You have to start with the basics. So the classes are simple. They're easy to follow. You know, the first class is all based around chocolate for World Chocolate Day. We had to coincide that with World Chocolate Day. So it's all based around chocolate. And the dishes that you mentioned there, I mean, they're not really complex dishes. You know, once you kind of break them down and you see how it's made, it's easy once you know once you know how to do it.
Once you're guided well on the whole process as well, I think it's knowing it, but also having the knowledge imparted to you by someone who really knows what they're doing. It's a great concept, because you will be supplying high quality ingredients in the form of the chocolates and anything unique.
Yeah, so I wanted to kind of give people something that they couldn't really buy in supermarkets. And the whole idea of sending chocolate to people. I mean, I'd love a delivery of chocolate. So I think, the chocolate, the idea of the chocolate is, you know, they're getting something that they can't maybe get easily. Valrhona is a brand of chocolate that I have worked with for years. And I have a bit of a personal attachment to, and I wanted to kind of give that experience to people. That's the chocolate I go back to, you know, in kitchens, and it's my preferred chocolate. It's got layers of flavor. Each chocolate tastes so different, and, you know, it's just so unique. And I think to be able to taste something that maybe you haven't tasted before, that's so different to, say, a commercial chocolate bar, you know, it's just a completely different level. So yeah, you will receive like chocolate in the post, or maybe a homemade kind of chocolate, like, preparation or something that you can use in the dishes for the class. Nice.
Oh my God, I'm starving.
Tell us something we didn't know, Patrick, but anyway.
I am absolutely drooling here, sorry.
So for anyone who'd like to book on, how can they do so?
So I have lots of different classes up on ifanoonan.com. Just have a look through the calendar. The plan is to kind of maybe do 2 to 3 classes a month, so one a week. And then the kind of gaps in the month will be the pastry drops. Mm. I have different classes up there. There'll be more coming soon, but each class is super different. Like, it's so different. Yeah. The first one is based around chocolate. The second one is all to do with cake basics. The third one is like brunch, because I wanted to do teach things that I love. And I mean, I love a brunch spread. Like, who doesn't really?
Who doesn't?
But brunch. And then I also have like a kids like kind of summer bake along as well. And I think that just goes back to the kind of my passion for teaching kids like skills and learning about food. So they're all very different. But it does kind of go back to the roots of teaching the basics and really kind of making it accessible for everybody.
And of course, the pastry lines as well, as you mentioned, you've got a chocolate. Pronounce it properly for me, because I have a terrible way of just mispronouncing everything. Entremont cake, is that correct?
Spot on.
Yeah.
The first drop is the chocolate entremet. And an entremet is a classic... Yeah, you got it.
He tried it. The entremet
is a classic, like, French dessert, usually like a mousse cake layered with lots of different things. So it looks really simple on the outside, and then when you cut into it, you've got all these different layers and textures of different things. So the first one is, I wanted to do something that was really delicious, that was familiar to people, but also had a little something different. So it's got a hazelnut sponge base, and then it has a praline mousse and a caramel kind of set custard. And that's all encased in a chocolate mousse cake. And then there's a layer of like a lemon confit kind of jam. So it's like layers of chocolate, hazelnut, caramel, and lemon. And it's delicious.
Okay. Now I'm starving now. Yeah, well done.
I can see it in your eyes. Just before you go, Aoife, how small are the classes?
So I do want to try and limit the numbers, because I want to give kind of everybody attention in the class. And if people have questions, I want them to be able to ask questions. I want it to be interactive. The limit will probably be about 25 a class. Mm-hmm. But that is purely because, I want to actually be able to talk to people during the class and have them as interactive and in kind of informal as they can be. I mean, if there's 100 people on the screen, I don't think I could keep up so or tell you off if you're doing something wrong. There are limited numbers, but we'll see how we go.
Perfect. Well, best of luck with it. It's amazing to see more people like yourself who are diversifying as the pandemic ends, but taking, I guess, the good stuff that I guess we all kind of learned over the year, the great things about technology and being able to educate yourself at home, the great thing about being able to set up businesses and make such great treats for people, both as classes and edible treats, which are always great too.
So, and order it to your door. I know. I mean,
yeah,
it's wonderful. Ideal, right?
Thank you so much for coming on Chew the Fat.
Hey, thank you so much. I'm delighted you asked me to come on. Thank you.
I love Aoife. And when we were talking...
I'm still hungry.
I'm starving. I'll have to cook dinner now. But we've actually not seen Aoife in so long, and even seeing her virtually was quite lovely, even though she actually only lives very close to us, so we actually probably could have done the interview in person, but
at a distance,
socially distant, of course. But what a great idea that she has, and a great venture, and best of luck. AoifeNoonan.com if you want to check out more of her stuff and her details. But that's another episode done of Chew the Fat for this week.
Is this episode 5 of the new format of the series, or 6?
6.
It's 6.
Oh my God. Is it 6?
No, it's 5, I think.
It's whatever it says at the top of the artwork on
the podcast.
I should know
this before I start.
Yes. Thank you for listening. It's been fun talking about wine.
Absolutely. And if you enjoyed this podcast, you can, of course, go back into the archives. There's lots and lots and lots of other episodes that have been created just for you that you can go back over and relive and replay. But if this particular episode piqued your interest, we would love you to subscribe to the Fat, to share it, your friends, your family, your loved ones, spread the word. And again, if you have anything that you think should be included in the Chew the Fat notice board, still a working title, please email us or find us on social media, and we will try to include that every week if you have the info into us before Thursday afternoon.
Yeah, that's always going to be the Chew the Fat notice board, isn't it?
Pretty much. Yeah, at this point. I'm not changing it.
It has, by the way, it has been noted that this podcast has been making quite a good reputation for itself in the Apple charts in particular. Yay. So thank you so much for listening if you are doing it there and everything like that, because it's very much noticed by us and appreciated by us too. But for another week, thank you, Patrick.
Thank you.
And thank you, me.
Yourself.
Me. And thank you for listening. We don't have a team.
He just thanked himself.
We don't have a team here making this. It is just you and I here. So we both really appreciate you listening to this. But until next week, thanks for listening and goodbye.